Thursday, March 11th, was a day divided between work on the library, the diplomatic corps, and the 10th and last congressional reception. But it was played against a strange background of loud, incessant chanting from the civil rights marchers parading with banners in front of the White House. They'd made so much noise the children couldn't sleep. In the morning, I had a meeting with Clark Clifford, Buzz, and Liz in the West Wing to talk about the 1-2-3 steps toward the Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library. A few moments before 11, Buzz answered the phone. Somebody was giving him the startling news that some of the civil rights marchers had marched right into the building with the tourists, had taken up their seats on the ground floor, and had refused to budge. A sit-in in the White House. Some 12 of them, mostly young folks. The meeting came to a quick halt while Buzz got the news to George, and there was a brief, hurried discussion about how to proceed with the tourists. I believe it was Lyndon who decided to let them keep right on coming, not close the White House to them, but wrap them in such a way that they did not march past the sit-inners, but left the sit-inners in quiet anonymity, alone on the ground floor, with a minimum of White House guards. I would have loved to have had a peek. But that would have destroyed the whole idea. For me, the second event of the day was to go to lunch at the Venezuelan embassy, where Mrs. Tejeda Paris, one of the loveliest young wives of the diplomatic corps, had invited all the wives of the Latin American ambassadors to be with me. I'd accepted several weeks ago. One, because I want to get to know the wives of the diplomatic corps better, in a quiet fashion, not 100 at a time. Two, because Mrs. Tejeda Paris is a member of my old international group, and I know and like her, though not well. It sounded innocuous enough, meeting all the wives together, and it was only later that I discovered the hurdles along the way. One, that Mrs. Sofia Sacasa of Nicaragua, the wife of the dean of the corps, would probably expect, so the State Department said, to extend such a courtesy first in her hemisphere if I accepted any such invitations. This I solved, and once more it was Liz who thought of it. She's full of ideas. By asking Mrs. Sevilla Casa to accompany me in my car to the luncheon. Actually, I enjoyed the ride very much. Mrs. Sevilla Sacasa is quite a woman. She was probably a very pretty girl. Now she is much too heavy, the mother of nine, but refreshingly outspoken, really quite funny. A change in diplomatic circles. She's a member of the Somoza clan, and she informed me that her father was no general at all, but that when the United States moved its Marines out several decades ago, after some upheaval in Central America, they had installed her father to keep the peace. Another difficulty I discovered is that Venezuela, alas, does not have relations with some of its Latin American neighbors, and therefore how could they invite the wife of the ambassador? These just happened to be out of town at the time, but their ambassador's wives to the OAS did come in most instances. At any rate, it was an interesting 2 hours. There were Venezuelan artworks on the wall and artifacts of pre-Columbian days. And we ate in a solarium that is typically Venezuelan, they told me. It's filled with tropical plants and orchids, the native flower of Venezuela. And we had the most delicious dessert, meringue or caramel, that I can remember. And afterwards, there was a petite concert by Morello Munoz, an internationally known Venezuelan concert singer, who seemed to me part Indian and whose voice was magnificent. The Latin American ladies were elegant and charming for the most part, and the conversation was light and did not really touch upon the things I would have been interested to hear them explore. The economy of their countries, what they're doing to lick poverty and further education, and all that seething cauldron of Latin America, there must be so much happening. I wish they had shed some light upon it for me. I dropped Senora Sevilla Sacasa off. And then at 5, there was another diplomatic interlude. When Lady Harlech arrived to say goodbye, she's returning to England. She's the gentlest, loveliest lady, so very British, and I would have liked to have known her better. We had a long, good visit in the Yellow Room. She told me she was going to stop in New York to say goodbye to Jackie Kennedy. Her husband had been the special close friend, and I think schoolmate, of President Kennedy. She told me about the Queen's habit of inviting 2 or 3 foreign diplomats to each of her dinners, so that in the course of a few years she got around to all the countries. Or maybe the Queen has dinners so often that she gets around to them sooner. And then, at 6:30, came the 10th and last of the congressional receptions. This time, one of the problems had been how to get the men past the 12 sit-iners. But luckily, those 12 had departed after some urging, very civilly done, I'm told, by the police at about 6 o'clock. This was a larger group than most of the others because we had tried to wrap up and include all those who had been out of town on other occasions but had expressed a regret at not being able to come. Among them were Texans Earl Cabell and Kika de la Garza, very Latin, very gay, very attractive, and the Richards Whites from El Paso, chiefs from my hometown of Marshall, our old-time campaigning friends, the Cecil Kings of California, and the Carl Perkins of Kentucky. He'd gone with me on my trip to Lick Branch School, and pretty Patsy Mink from Hawaii with her husband, and Congresswoman Edith Green, who's given us so much trouble on the education bill because she fears the Pope's influence at every turn, and Republican leader Les Ahrens and his pretty wife, and dramatically enough, the congressman from Selma, Alabama, I think their name's Glenn Andrews. It was the same routine, greeting and pictures, briefing for the men, the theater with the ladies, for the movie on White House art, and then reminiscences by several of the ladies, this time including Mrs. Humphrey. Oh, stairs for all the ladies who wished to go to the second floor, and then in the state dining room for refreshments. But we were very late in being joined by Lyndon and the congressman tonight. They told me it was one of the best sessions they'd ever had, obviously one of the longest because it was 9:30 when they emerged. These briefings have grown longer and longer. When the news had come that the Reverend Reeb had died, Lyndon and I excused ourselves for a moment, a helpless, painful moment, to talk to Mrs. Reeb. But what is there to say? We went upstairs a little past 10, but we could hear the congressional guests still laughing and the music still going below, and out in front, the chanting of the civil rights marchers. What a house, what a life.